The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I can't believe this. Oh, gosh. But I'll get to it. I can't figure out how to use this smartphone. Makes me feel real dumb. Dr. Ray Guarendi, thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. Found a way, because we get as many emails as we do calls. And I figured we had to come up with something to address all these emails. I call them E-Persons, because I have been accused of being insensitive, borderline patriarchal. So therefore, I would refuse to use any terms that even smell male. And, of course, M-A-I-L sounds like male. It's a homonym. So therefore, I have to say E-person. Every once in a while, I say email, but that's just kind of a remnant of my insensitive past. The program here, The Doctor Is In, comes at you. Now, see, that's a very aggressive way of putting it, isn't it? Male, aggressive way. It comes toward you? No, it is something we share together, emotively, sensitively. And today just happens to be our chance together. Notice how I'm force teaming here. I'm getting us all together, using a lot of plural pronouns, our and we and us and they, to take in. By the way, I've just realized, too, the best way to deal with some of this nonsense that is now just running our culture. I've never seen so many dumb ideas run our culture. Of course, I haven't been around all that long to see them, but it just seems like, in the word muggerage, we have educated ourselves into imbecility. So, I want to make fun of some of these trendy, psychobabblic, politically of life. Stuff is a guy word. If it were a woman, we would hear about the vicissitudes of life, about the sharing moments of one's existence, about the interactions, the relational purpose of one's meaning. I think stuff covers it all. 877-573-7825. I think I got a way to make, like, zillions of dollars. Zillions with a Z. A lot of times, guys develop these personality tests for use in corporations, companies. They have the employers take the test, and then they put together a personality profile. Maybe they might put together some information on proper management style with particular types of employees somewhere in the authoritative tree of the company. They develop these, essentially they're just self-report inventories is what they are. They ask questions and you answer the questions and then you put together a profile. Now that's not hard to do. It truly isn't hard to do. Now companies pay a lot of money for this stuff. A lot. I don't know how much they use it, and I don't really know how useful it all is. Because even the best people in universities designing personality tests have been frustrated by the inability of personality tests to really accurately portray what someone is like. It's just very hard to do. It has to do with the nature of personality. It has to do with the fuzziness of
personality traits, characteristics. It has to do with how much our behavior is affected by circumstances, by people. I might be honest in one situation and not so honest in another. These are all just roadblocks to putting together accurate personality descriptions. But Dr. Ray, I mean, I've seen personality descriptions about me, and I'm just amazed at how remarkably accurate they are. One of my favorite studies done by these twicky psychologist types was done on sophomores. Now, sophomores are basically the human mice of psychologist experiments. When I was in grad school and I was working as a grad assistant, I oftentimes helped on various professors' research programs. And invariably, we picked on the sophomores. Sophos Morris, meaning wise fool from the Greek. Well, these psychologists typed together a personality test. And they gave it to college students. Please fill this out. This is a new personality test. We feel it is far more accurate than previous tests. And then we will score the personality results, give you a profile describing you. So the kids dutifully did as they were instructed. The results were gathered up, and sometime later, the profiles were handed out to each of the students to read. They asked the students, on a scale of, generally it's 1 to 5, that's the most popular scale in use as a rating scale, how accurate do you think we were in describing you? Rate it, please. Well, the abundance of responses rated the new personality test as very accurate. Right there. Okay, so probably what happened is that these psychologist types came up with a quantum leap in personality assessment. Obviously, that's what happened because all the kids said, hey, you hit me, man. You're right there, right on the personality nose. You got me. One of the rules when we used to design surveys and experiments in college was that what you look like you're measuring, what the people, the subjects think you are measuring, is not what you're measuring. You're measuring something else. Well, what was the twist to this particular survey? It was this. Every student received the exact same description. But Dr. Ray, there's a wide range of students and personalities in there. How could they label this as very accurate in assessing who they are? Well, it speaks again, in part, of the fuzziness of personality characteristics. I don't have the description in front of me. The researchers called it the Aunt Fanny description. The reason they said that is because they, in the discussion section of their results, they said this description could pretty much fit anybody's Aunt Fanny. In other words, it was generic, very generic. Generally, you are a thoughtful person, but there are moments when you express your thoughts, and there are other moments when you keep those thoughts to yourself. You enjoy the social company of your closest friends, but sometimes it takes you a while to warm up. Partly this is how astrological charts work. They're vague enough in their personality descriptions that people can say, yeah, that's me. That's me. Just as an aside, I don't have time to get into it in this particular monologue, but that's one of the problems with people self-diagnosing from a symptom list that they read either on the internet or even going to the official manuals, because these characteristics, as hard as we try to make them specific, by their very nature, they are fuzzy sometimes. But I haven't given up trying to make zillions of dollars by designing personality tests that these corporations can use to then make managerial decisions on who would best work with whom on the basis of their personality type. I got to get one of those things for radio hosts. What would the personality of a radio host look like? In my case, I took one once. It said, and I didn't believe this, it said, obnoxious, outspoken, opinionated. Obviously, it was for somebody else. 877-573-7825, number to call to get onto the program. I would be delighted to hear from you. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. I'm Dr. Ray.
Well, hello, guy.
Don't let everyone else get all the great advice.
Call now to speak with Dr. Ray.
Catholic radio, I believe, is the greatest tool for evangelization that the church has today. And I know this because we hear from people all over the world that tell us all the time they came to faith in Christ, in the Catholic Church, through Catholic radio. Guy that lives right next door to you, he might not ask you about your Catholic faith, but he'll ask us. He'll call in and say, tell me about the Catholic Church.
Dr. David Anders thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare cost? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
The Doctor Is In is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical, and in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
How do I handle difficult family members? When do I correct others? When do I hold my tongue? Too often we're late in realizing that we mishandle a situation, causing both resentment and frustration. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. And in my new book, Thinking Like Jesus, I tackle these questions and more. Check it out and more of my books at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Trained to be highly articulate and stuff. Delighted to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. 877-573-7825, number to call to get onto the program. 877-57-EQUAL. Getting close into the holidays, so I thought I would put out something for the guys here that... Fellas, you need to show a little more sensitivity. This came through to me. Husband and wife were Christmas shopping. The wife suddenly noticed her husband was missing. Didn't know where he went. So she called him on the phone. Said, "Where are you? You know we got a lot to do." He said, "Do you remember the jewelers that we went to about 10 years ago and you absolutely fell in love with that diamond necklace? I couldn't afford it at the time, and I said that one day I'd get it for you." She started to get all choked up. "Yes, I remember that shop," she said. "Well, I'm in the sporting goods store next to that."
Guys, got to show a little more sensitivity. I want to just revisit briefly the Aunt Fanny description, the personality tests. Why would this be? Why would it that psychologist types, who are the really the purveyors of trying to understand personality and what makes people tick, why would it be so tough? I did a dissertation, was on various sources of information given to clinicians and asking them to describe a particular theoretical client. I had what they called face sheet data. A face sheet data, when you come into a psychologist's office, is name, rank, serial number, just stuff like that, presenting problem, not anything in real detail. Just we want to get the information for the file. I had social history. I had results of some psychological tests, I think. This is so fuzzy. It was so long ago now. And I had one other source of information, and I'm blanking on it. Not necessarily important right now. Here's the bottom line. Clinicians and grad students, I had two different groups, put together approximately the same accuracy description pretty much on the basis of any source of information. And the grad students were as good as the experienced clinicians at doing this. Why would this be? Again, because they were limited. We tend to predict out of personality traits and stereotypes. So many of them, just getting the presenting problem, could put together a description of the client on the basis of just the presenting problem. Why? Because they acted out of stereotypes. One of them was, for example, a young boy acting out in school, disruptive, difficult behavior in school. Well, there's a certain profile that does seem to fit that kind of conduct. So it was disappointing in one sense. But in another, that doesn't mean that someone who has experience, good clinical skills and judgment, can't do a better job at therapy than your basic grad student. This was just looking at putting together a description on the basis of minimal information. Alan from Springfield, Missouri. What's up, Alan? How are you?
Pretty good. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hello? Okay, sorry. I had a call in the middle of calling. But anyways,
You want it, Alan? You want to take it? Hey, Alan, you want to take that call? Could be more important, you know.
Oh, no, I've already talked to her. She's fine now.
Okay.
So, thank you, Phil. So, okay, I'm pretty hard-headed, like my parents, and I'm trying my best not to be. And I'm actually still planning to do counseling, and I don't know if you had any words of like encouragement on how it can help me. Because, of course, being hard-headed in my mind, I feel like I don't need it, but I'm trying to. I am looking to try and accept the counseling and go do it finally. And,
what are you hard-headed about? What are you hard-headed about? If you're saying that I think I should...
I feel like I don't need it, I guess.
Well, why would people think you need it? Why do you think you need it?
Well, it was about a relationship, and I did make personal, some mistakes, and I, in my mind, I feel like I'm not going to make it again, and I'm confident that I won't. And so far I haven't again. And I didn't think I needed counseling. I'm one of those people that I think that if I can't do it on my own, then I don't know how to. I just look to do stuff on my own. Like I'm lone wolf kind of in a way, and don't like to try and put burns on others by getting, help. I know they're there to help. I like to try and do stuff on my own because I feel like it's more accomplished than if I do better myself on my own and whatnot. So,
well, Alan, I'm going to say something's going to surprise you. If you don't want to go to counseling, you don't have to go to counseling. There's nothing that says if you're not running your life well, according to other people, and you say, well, I'm reasonably satisfied with the way I'm doing things, and yeah, I make my mistakes, but you don't have to go. Obviously, maybe you could benefit from it, maybe you wouldn't. But there isn't anything that says, somebody didn't put together a petition of all the people, and it has 82 signatures on it that says, Alan needs counseling. Well,
yeah.
I'd like to see the basis on what they say that. If you think, yeah, okay, as I look at that relationship, as I look at the way I run other parts of my life, I think I might want to assess what I do, how I think, what's going on. Well, if you think that, go.
Yeah.
But if you say to yourself, I'm really not moved to do this, then there's nothing written that says you have to.
Yeah, and I think I'm still going to do it just because maybe I'm going to get more out of it than I think. And the reason why it's weird for me to go to it is because even though I'm not like a doctor or not by any means got that kind of knowledge, but I do understand like the reason why I did the dumb stuff I did. I understand all of it, and I understand a way to keep myself from doing it. And but I feel like there is stuff that I probably don't know, or ideas that I don't know that could benefit even more, that the counseling would help with. So I am going to still do it. I'll just see what you thought, if I was being too hard-headed, and I don't need to be like that, because I know I've been like that my whole life, and I need to try and not be as solid-headed.
Well, I think what you're saying, when you're saying you're hard-headed, is that you are slow to listen to anybody's advice, anybody's ideas about what you could have done better. Now, my experience is when somebody is hard-headed, believe it or not, it's going to shock you, Alan, but the more stubborn somebody is, the more unwilling to take any kind of direction, doesn't mean they're confident. It means they lack confidence. Because if you were confident in yourself, you'd probably say, okay, let me hear what you got to say. Could help me. But when you're not confident in yourself, I don't want to hear it. Don't tell me. I know what's going on. I know how to handle it. I'm cool. I can do it myself.
Yeah.
That is not a strong personality. That's a bit of a fragile one.
Yeah.
I know that might shock you, my friend. How old are you?
I'm 25, just turned 25.
All right, you're a young guy. You may find you may find that the counseling for you is not a good fit. I think a lot of times that depends upon who you get. If you're a Catholic fella, then you probably want to find somebody that's going to respect Catholic values and morals and worldview. If you go to a secular counselor who thinks that religious people are, your religion's part of your problem, then obviously you're not going to relate to a counselor like that. So keep in mind that whoever you pick, sometimes it's a good fit and sometimes it's not. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate the call, buddy. Take good care. That is a surprise to most people, which is, I remember once a relative said to me, somebody she was dating, she said, he is so self-confident. And I said, how did you decide that? Well, he has an opinion. He knows what it is. He is just so certain in his opinions. And I said, is he flexible? No, he's confident. He knows how he thinks, and he just has such a strong view. I said, well, that's good in some things. But in other things, I think you got to have room for a little flexibility. And that's not necessarily a strong person. 877-573-7825.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I want to welcome you, if you're not familiar, with the wonderful world of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. What will America become if it makes it impossible for the Holy Spirit to work here because of untruth and self-indulgence and paganism? This is not just a nice discussion of the gifts of the Holy Spirit, because I'm going to discuss what happens when people make it impossible to be prudent, just, or honest, or brave, or courageous, or reverent. When people make that impossible, what a terrible thing they do not only to themselves, but to our society.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
In the midst of our culture today, in this age of relativism, which wants to grant Jesus some significance, but not so much, so we'll give him wise man, great leader, inspiring preacher, great teacher, prophet. You don't get that option when you claim to be God. What reasons do we have to believe that he is who he said he is? And it's important, again, to employ the use of our reason and to understand that faith is not blind. My faith, and please God, the faith of everyone here, is not blind. It rests on something. It rests on a number of things, not least of which is my own experience of God, but it also has something substantial which can be claimed through history. We're not talking about a galaxy long, long ago, far, far away when we talk about Jesus. We're talking about a precise moment in history which has been testified to by countless testimonies, and you and I have access to them.
Dr. Ray Garetti here. Thank you for joining on The Doctor Is In, your 60-minute psych aerobic workout.
Delighted to have you with me. IQ raising, putting your IQ into the target zone. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. Molly from Oklahoma. Hi, Molly.
Hi, Dr. Ray. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So I was wondering, do you think that it is intrinsically evil if the church, if the church would ever come out and say that the frozen embryos, just the ones that are already made, can be saved, you know, like by putting them into somebody, you know, like in vitro
fertilization
kind of thing?
Embryo adoption.
You know, yes, embryo adoption. Do you think that that's ever a possibility, or do you think that that's intrinsically evil?
Okay. What I think doesn't matter. However, how the church has dealt with this, it's an ongoing debate among Catholic ethicists, moralists, theologians, ongoing debate. There's a document written by the Vatican called Dignitas Personae. It says there's some serious reservations about doing something like this. However, they don't come out and condemn it as immoral. So probably the best thing to say is it's still sort of up in the air, and you got people coming down on both sides. Let me see if I can get some more information on this. Go to... Father Tad Paholchek from the Bioethics Center in Boston. He wrote an article called "What Should We Do with Frozen Embryos?" Okay. So there does seem to be some worry about the complications involved in doing something like this morally, but the Vatican, in its teaching capacity, has not come out and said it is intrinsically wrong.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Molly. You're welcome, dear.
Okay, bye.
Now, bye-bye. Now, you know, when someone asks a question like that, by and large, it is not a question, I want knowledge on this. It's a question of, I'm thinking of doing this. Either Molly had some embryos frozen before realizing and coming back to the Catholic Church and what the Catholic Church teaches about this. And I've seen people in those situations who prior to becoming a Christian or prior to really re-embracing their Catholic faith had a number of in vitro fertilization embryos frozen. And then they realized, hey, there's a life sitting there. At very, very earliest stages of life, it is there. Now what? All right, and they want to make it right. They don't want to think to themselves, geez, I've got nine beginning little ones. So do they say, can we reimplant? And I think in a case like that, now I'm just shooting from the hip, but I think in a case like that, if it's mom who's saying please. Now here's the other problem with that, of course. Typically they implant several, and usually one survives. Sometimes two, all right, but the others die. Okay, so now there's a problem. But if it's the mom who wants to do this, I'm thinking there could be a case where she could say, okay, please, one at a time. One at a time. I want to do everything I can. On the other hand, somebody says, well, there are obviously quite a bit of frozen embryos all over the place. What do we do then? See, this is... I know the world doesn't like Catholic teaching on a lot of sexuality and reproduction. They just don't. The problem is the world oftentimes doesn't take into account the unintended effects. Okay, so we can do in vitro fertilization. We can make this happen in a dish. Then we have all these little babies. Dr. A, they're not babies. Come on, Dr. A. Well, they are in the very, very, very earliest stages of human life. Everything's there for babyhood and personhood and humanhood. Okay. So now the problem comes in that, all right, we implant these in someone. And then we say, oh, well, what do we do with the other ones there? You know, because we know a bunch of them are going to die. You start messing around with the way God does things. And then you find out that's why he's smarter than we are. Elma from Washington. I am so glad that Elma made up her mind to call. I think that's a good first step. Hi, Elma.
Hi. So, Dr. Ray.
Yes, ma'am.
My question was, I'm a pretty indecisive person, and I wanted to know, how do I become more decisive, or is there a strength in that, or...
Yes.
Yeah.
When you got a critical decision, flip a coin. I'm being facetious. Elma, you know why people, there's a couple of reasons, big reasons, why people don't make decisions. They waffle. Mm-hmm. The first thing is they're terribly afraid of being wrong. What if this doesn't work out, right? Gosh, what if the other one was better? Ah, I knew I made a mistake. You can't fear something not working out. You can't. Furthermore, a lot of times when you fear it, it's because you think it's a reflection on you. I failed. I was wrong. I picked the wrong one. What a dumb decision that was. What's wrong with me? You start thinking like that, Elma, and every decision then becomes a reflection on who you are. You got to get that out of your head. Okay? That's the first thing. The second thing is this. And I always use this example. I call it my 1,000 pieces of decision example. If you have to make a decision, let's say it's take another job, go back to school, move, whatever it is, some financial decision, car, and you say, well, I'm really, boy, oh boy, oh boy, I'm almost 50-50, but I'd have to say 501 out of the 1,000 says to do it this way. 499 out of the 1,000 says to do it that way. I gotta go with the 501, but that doesn't mean the 499 goes away. You can't let it keep nagging at you. You have to say, I made the decision on the basis of 501. Could I be wrong? Of course I could be. But it's not necessarily a reflection on who I am as a person.
Stopping you from becoming a Catholic.
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
look? Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
A federal district court in Washington, D.C. recently denied a motion filed by the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, in a failed effort to eliminate the consumer fraud allegations advanced against the organization in a civil case set to go to trial early next year. The lawsuit alleges that Morris Days, the resident attorney and manager for civil rights at a now-defunct CARE chapter in Virginia, was in fact not an attorney, and that he failed to provide legal services for clients who came to CARE for legal representation. As alleged, CARE knew of this fraud and purposely conspired with Days to cover it up. The American Freedom Law Center represents the five Muslim plaintiffs in this case who were victims of this massive fraud. CARE, a self-described Muslim public interest law firm, was previously named as a Muslim Brotherhood Hamas front group by the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office. The result of the trial court's ruling in our case is that CARE National must now stand trial for violations of Virginia's statutory consumer fraud. The decade-long litigation exposes CARE to more than $1 million in legal fees alone. Given CARE's pedigree and mission, it is no wonder that the organization was prepared to deal corruptly with its own Muslim clients in an attempt to cover up a massive fraud made possible by its own attorney and staff. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Dr. Igarendi, boldly going where no brain has gone before. Warp Factor 4, Mr. Slow. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. All right, let's head up to the phones. Fred from New England. Radical difference with his wife on daughter dating. Wife seems to think, well, let's just let them move along at their own pace, however that is. And dad says, oh, boy, I don't like what situations they could find themselves in. Hi, Fred.
How you doing, Dr. Ray?
All right, how lax is she on what your daughter dates?
Well, I think she, you know, my daughter's first boyfriend, they've been dating for about 6-8 months, and I've noticed that she's definitely a lot more lax than I am. I walked in, and this is the second or third time it's happened, where she just turned 17, he's 17, the daughter and the boyfriend. And they're kind of laying on the couch side by side, hugging each other or whatever. That's, you know, they're sitting side by side. They're not laying. The other day I walked in and they were laying on the couch together, but my wife was in the room with them and she didn't seem to have a problem with it because she was in the room. And she threw the old, well, when you were that age, didn't you? I said, well, if I did cocaine when I was that age, wouldn't that be wrong to do
that?
Well, yeah, but
if I was stupid and immoral at that age, I guess it's okay for my kid to be, huh?
And I just kind of did lose it, unfortunately, and I apologize for that. But I'm like, this is not appropriate. I'm sorry. I don't care you know, so-and-so said, I said, well, they're not the moral authority on our children. So what does that have to do with anything? And it just, we haven't been able to talk about it because I'm just like at my wit's end with this whole thing. And my daughter's a good kid, straight A, high honors, into sport. But it just did not sit right with me.
I was wondering how long it was going to take you to say she's a really good kid that gets good grades. We get that one all the time. Okay. You didn't say it right off the top. It just took you a while to get there. I would ask your wife a few questions. I would say, okay, if she is willing to do that in front of us, what do you think she's willing to do when we're not around? First thing.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing, yeah, I'd say, how would you deal with a pregnancy? Out of wedlock pregnancy. She's not going to do that. We've raised her right. That's not going to happen. Of course, I know. And she doesn't want to acknowledge that because to her, that what you're saying, that you're challenging her motherhood when you say this, because if your daughter would get pregnant, then that means your wife was quote unquote wrong about her laxity. But I think it's a fair question. You can ask it again. I said, I'm not saying anything about your motherhood. I'm just asking, what about this? Because what you're doing is putting down seeds. Thirdly, I think it's okay to say when you're there, hey, kids, separate here. Separate it out. But your bigger worry, Fred, is not what they're doing in front of you. Your bigger worry is what will lead to what when they're not around you. That's your bigger worry. I think that's a very, very legitimate one.
Okay.
I would ask your wife. Just keep asking her questions. So what do you think happens when we're not around? What could happen when we're not around? And here's the other one, and I think this is, it's at the basis of an awful lot of parents not wanting to take more strong action, which is your wife is afraid your daughter will be mad at her and won't like her and will think she's kind of a Neanderthal throwback. Am I wrong on that one?
Oh, no, because I said to her real quick, I just said, you know, oh, I realize that my child is a good child, but I said, do you know how many friends I have that they're good children are hooked on pornography because of iPhones? Do you know how many good kids are hooked on drugs because they would never do it and they were good kids?
And you are totally right, Fred. Take it from a shrink who sees it every day. You are absolutely 100% correct. And your wife is like so many parents I deal with, which is, no, they wouldn't do that. No, sir. And then they get blindsided. Maybe you ought to decide you're going to take a firmer stance on this. That's up to you and your family. But good luck to you, friend.
Yeah.
Good luck to you.
Thank you, Dr. A. Your advice means a lot, honey.
Okay, buddy. Mark, Columbus, Ohio. He is Catholic. His girlfriend is not. Now what? Hi, Mark.
Hey, Dr. A. Thanks for taking my call.
How far into the relationship are you?
I'm about 4 years.
Oh, that's pretty far.
High school. Yeah.
That's pretty far. Are you having a closer walk with your faith, and that's what's making it more obviously different between the two of you?
Yes. Yes.
Is she liking the fact that you're taking your faith more to heart?
She is. But the thing is, she fears that my faith is more intellectual and more fact-based than it is faith-based. But I'm expressing to her that the facts and the things I've been learning about the Catholic Church is actually helping me dig deeper in my faith.
And does she see it as making you a better guy to be a boyfriend?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think that is something that we're both working on is allowing our faith to change our lives in a physical way.
In other words, you guys were more physical, and now you're backing off on that.
Correct.
Is that where the problem lies for her?
Yeah, and so we've been trying to do Bible studies and stuff together, but she wants to back off of that even a little bit because we have different views on what Bible studies we should be going to and stuff like that.
Is she relatively serious in her non-Catholic Christianity?
Yes.
Okay. It seems like it's going to come down to, Mark, how willing she is to look at the Catholic faith, to look at what you believe and the way you want to conduct yourself morally, and whether she is attracted to it or not. And if she is saying, no, Mark, the more you're getting into this, the more I'm seeing differences between us. If that's the case, then you got some serious decisions to make here, son, because you're going to have to decide, are we of one mind and heart on this, or are we drifting apart? You said something that kind of unsettled me a little bit. You said, she's saying that my faith is all intellectual, and it's not of the heart or whatever that is. Now, I don't know what would motivate her to say that, but if she's saying, well, Mark, you're nowhere nicer to get along with or easier to be with now that you're becoming more Catholic. As a matter of fact, it's the worse. Okay, that's one. She could be saying that she doesn't like the fact that you have Catholic answers for her objections, because before you didn't know enough. Now you're starting to know it, and you're starting to have some very definite answers to her questions and objections and whatever attacks might happen. She doesn't like right. that. She doesn't like that. And that's why she's saying, I don't want to go to your Bible study because your Bible study isn't the correct Bible study. My Bible study over here is the better one. Now you're starting to, the difference is starting to show up. And you got to ask yourself a question here. Where's this going to go? Where's this going to go? How is she looking at the faith that I'm embracing more and more, and is she willing to learn about it and hear about it and consider it? My wife and I were not of the same faith when we married. Okay, this was way back. And at that time, I was Catholic, but she went to Mass with me. But ultimately, she drifted like I drifted. But we came back around. But that's not always the way it goes. As a matter of fact, most of the time it's not. Thanks, Mark. This is Dr. Ray. I'll be back.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Dr. Ray has more great advice soon. Don't go anywhere.
Check out EWTN's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
The Doctor Is In is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical, and in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
How do I handle difficult family members? When do I correct others? When do I hold my tongue? Too often, we're late in realizing that we mishandle a situation, causing both resentment and frustration. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. And in my new book, Thinking Like Jesus, I tackle these questions and more. Check it out and more of my books at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Restaurant guarantee still in effect. You listen to two total programs, any amount, any minutes, as long as they total up to two programs, and you will be complimented in restaurants because of your children. Okay. Lisa from New York is starting to dread already the contacts with family members over the holidays because they're from out of state and then they're going to be together, or maybe not, maybe not. Maybe she just avoids them during the year. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
Okay.
Good.
Well, these family members, do you see them throughout the year or no, just the holidays?
It's one family member in particular, and only see her about 2 to 3 times a year. It's my mother-in-law. She lives out of town. And luckily, my husband and I, we just have a fantastic marriage. We're devout Catholics. We homeschool our 4 kids. But it always comes to head around the holidays when she is very anti-Catholic and anti, just more conservative traditional values. And so it would be okay if she could just come and be grandma. But it's, you know, her political convictions and religious convictions always make their way into dinner table conversation or just in our home. And it's just so divisive, even when we try to, because my husband and I are both on the same team about this, just try to say, oh, we're just not going to discuss this. It's the holidays, or let's just keep this about the kids. It is a continuous, did you see this on Russia? Did you see this, the Vatican said? And the challenge is that my oldest kids are very aware, and they listen, and they hear this. So we can't not say something, but we also don't want it to overcome the holidays. So it's kind of a balance that we have that's an issue.
How much can you just kind of look back at her and not respond?
I try, but it would, if you could kind of imagine what a very, especially this election, just the previous election, kind of just threw her through a tizzy. So every march that you saw televised on, you know, the more liberal channels, she would be one of those people with the sign shouting. So it comes from a place of, I feel very bad for her because there's a previous divorce that she brings up every time, brings up the family history. She feels
she's not a happy
alone.
Individual, is she? She's angry, unhappy individual?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. But she's family. And, you know, so we want.
Well, you also took her son from her.
I did.
You did. You made her son this weirdo Catholic, weirdo right-wing conservative, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you got to figure if that's the case, if she sees it that way, that's the resentment.
Yeah.
Two things. Lisa, remember one thing. You only have to put up with her for 3 hours or whatever it is that she's there.
Yeah.
Time limited. You can put up with anybody, time limited. The older kids, you can prepare them before she gets there.
Yeah.
Grandma's going to bring up some stuff. I'm not going to challenge her at the time. I don't want to mess up the holidays. I'll kind of let her rant and rave and say what she has to say, and I'll do everything I can to avoid an argument with her. Afterwards, we'll explain it to you. Afterwards, you have questions, we'll talk about it. That's the way I would do it. I would not butt heads with her during the holidays. Well, so, what do you think about blah, blah, blah? Well, yeah that's kind of a sad what's going on in the church there with some of the hierarchy. It is a sad thing. Well, do you think that, you know, she's going to keep pushing? She'll just keep pushing.
Yeah.
Keep your answers one sentence. Well, I pray for them. Well, I don't think prayers are going to do that much, you know, because of what they done. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, well, I sure hope so. Just ever so slow, non-committal kinds of answers. Now there are people thinking, Dr. Ray, we've got to defend. You can defend in a soft way, but what it sounds like you're saying, Lisa, is she doesn't want any answers. He just wants to attack.
No, we've tried. I mean, every holiday, I say, we're heading to church if you'd like to join us, or, you know. And
no, like, no, like, don't even say that.
I made the mistake years ago, and I did, and that did not.
Yeah. Oh, no. Look out.
I know.
Keep in mind, you know, she's giving you plenty of evidence, sadly, that she's a hostile, angry woman. And maybe even her own life hasn't gone the way she wants. And she's looking at you and your husband with this quote-unquote wonderful marriage. Who knows what the emotional stuff is? If you didn't get on, please call back. You will be first up. I'm Dr. Ray. Walk with God. You got your children. Hold them tightly by that hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.